This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, it is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. A win in your in spot for the Chargers in Indy as that number kind of trickles to the Colts. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. Mike Pritchard's going to join as well. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you had a nice holiday as we wrap up the Christmas presents and a Christmas present for Nathaniel Hackett. Let's be fair. He's been fired after 15 games. He's relieved of his duties. My assumption is he's relieved because it never felt right. Quarterback play was bad. They had fighting on the sidelines yesterday, Michael Lombardi. Yeah. Didn't feel like he really had control. I want to read you this paragraph from the Broncos release. Remember, the Walmarts now own the team. Greg Penner, the CEO, said this: "I will lead our head coaching search with support from our ownership group and George." He's talking about Peyton, the general manager, who I have confidence in as our general manager. "As we begin the process of selecting our next head coach, we remain focused on playing competitive football to finish the season on a positive note." What's your takeaway from the Broncos there?
Well, I think he's taken it over. Last year, he wasn't there, and there was no owner there. So George ran the search. He had the private plane. He was flying all over. They were doing the Zoom calls. It was his call to make. He had complete authority to do it. I don't know where Elway is in all this, if he's still a consultant. Remember, he's an outside. He was the president, a consultant. I don't know what his role will be in this. But to me, the bigger issue, I wrote about this for the Daily Coach today. They better get some form of alignment in that building. They better understand how to get alignment in that building. And they better understand that the coach that they bring in isn't responsible for the alignment. See, here's the big difference, right? So alignment only occurs when the ownership group tells you what they visioned for the company, right? So alignment can't occur from middle management, which is the head coach or the general manager. Alignment has to occur from the top. The owner has to come in and say, here's the kind of football team I want. Not necessarily in specific terms. I want to run West Coast. I want to run V. You know, none of that. I want to be this, and I want players to represent that, and I want to be, this is the kind of team I want. Then you go out and build it. They don't get that. It's hard. They're going to constantly go through this. Oh, are we a West Coast team? Are we going to be this? You know, are we going to be, you know, we're going to compartmentalize? We're going to hire a young, good defense coordinator? You know, they got their defense coordinator is a young coach. He's really a good young coach. You got to let him go? You're going to keep the same defense and hire an offensive guy? See, that creates misalignment when you do that. And I think they have to work their way through all those issues. It'll be a challenge. And it'll be a challenge to see how this owner handles it. Does he get it? Does he understand it? And as we know in the National Football League, very few do.
You know, I'm curious what you'd say to this. As far as a coach like Peyton or somebody that's credible, they know they align themselves with a quarterback, and that essentially leads to job security. It feels like a spot in Denver where it's going to have to be a hungry up-and-coming coach because they're going to take a job with Russell Wilson, and we've seen the decline.
Well, I think the guy who comes in there is going to say, look, I want a 7-year contract. You know, I want a 7-year. Dan Campbell got 6 for that rebuild that's going on. Now, it's kind of moved along quicker than I think Campbell felt like, but he wanted a long-term contract. I think you're going to have to say, okay, but this comes back to alignment, right? This comes back to how are we going to align this organization? This comes back to when Chuck Knoll walked into the Pittsburgh office and became the head coach after Joe Paterno turned down the job and said, okay, here's how we're going to rebuild this franchise, which has historically lost all these years. And it's through alignment. And I think that's ultimately what you have to forget about. You don't have draft picks. Forget about Russell can't play anymore, right? We all know these are true, right? We've got to manage the situation the best we can. We'll muddle our way through it. We'll make smart decisions moving forward. We'll build a team around it. And we'll put all our efforts into finding the next young quarterback. And everybody will play a role within their job description. That's what has to happen. And they've got to find a leader. You know, they got to find a guy who can come in and lead. And who's going to be able to handle the tough times moving forward, because it's going to be hard. Sean Payton's at a point in his career where, you know, he wants to go somewhere where he's got some assets to do what he needs to do. Because remember, Sean's not a guy to be patient. I mean, they trade away first-round picks that down there like the Rams do. I mean, Sean was always buying on the credit card in New Orleans. You know, put me off, put me up. But he had Breeze. Why not? Right? He had Breeze. You're going to do that. When you come into a situation, you can't do that. It's more challenging.
You know, this hire for the Broncos is very unique because they have a unique position, Michael. You're going to have to find somebody that has the constitution to deal with Russell Wilson as a player and a person individually, but then to kind of meld that with the dynamic there within the locker room. This is going to be almost a psychologist slash head coach coming in to kind of really work with a weird dynamic there, because Russell Wilson makes things odd.
Yeah, and in the locker room, he's not that you can feel it. I mean, national television game, the strength of your team is your defense. You give up 51 points. Baker Mayfield throws four incomplete passes. You never stop the run. You never stop the pass. You know, I mean, you're figuring that game is going to be like a lot of Bronco games, 13-10, 17-10, low scoring, defense playing good. You know they weren't going to be able to move the ball consistently because Russell can't make any plays. But for the defense to collapse like that, I thought they should have fired Nathaniel after the Carolina game when Carolina beat them 23-10. You know, next week they go back into Baltimore. They play Baltimore 10-9 in that game, you know, and then they get blown out by Kansas City only to let Kansas City come back in them. And they beat Arizona, which had to play Trace McSorley in the game. I think if they would have played Colt McCoy the whole time, they don't win. So I think they're 5 weeks too early. I think they're 4 weeks a little too early on this because the team wasn't buying into it anyway. I mean, you could see it. You could see it with the team. You could see when a team buys into a player and when a team doesn't buy in a player.
You know, I wrote down from the game yesterday to ask you where it was evident that Russell is broke. Remember in the second half where he had an opportunity to run for like 20, 25 yards, but he threw a pick in the end zone?
He doesn't want to get hit anymore.
No, he doesn't want to get hit. It's not his fault.
It's just like it's not Nathaniel's fault. It's not his fault. It was on the tape last year. You didn't want to see it. He ran for 183 yards, the lowest in his career. He wouldn't run. He wasn't cooking last year. The media kept saying, let him cook. Right, he had a wide open receiver against the Washington football team, and he doesn't even throw it to him. I mean, there were so many games last year. You go back and say the way he played last year is the way he's played. John Schneider's sitting there laughing. This is the way he played for us. It's just worse because you're not a good. He's gotten even more bad. He's gotten worse. It's bad English. So to me, like it's there. It's just you don't want to admit it, and now you got to maneuver around it, and it's going to take a lot of leadership to do it. It's going to take an owner who understands how to lead, who understands what he has to do first. That's first and foremost. He wasn't there for the last hire. So now he gets to come in. This is not about finding a young play caller in Denver. It's not. And yeah, the fact Russell that Wilson. They hired Dom Capers as the interim coach, I didn't even know Dom was on the staff. I mean, he's, you know, it's like, to me, yeah, I know he's been a head coach twice before, and so that gives you some stability, you know, and you keep everybody in their role because he didn't have a lot to do, so he can manage the game. But, I mean, seriously, I can't, you know. I mean, but what else are they going to do? They had to make a move.
I mean, I'm not an ageist, but Dom Capers over under 75 at this point, 74, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I mean, like yeah. Look, but again, it comes back to how are we going to build this organization? How are we going to run this team? That's from the owner. That's the vision. You need all those things. You know, and George Payton obviously has said to you in very clear fashion that that's a bigger job for him than he's capable of handling. Because the two biggest decisions he had to make was picking the coach and picking the quarterback, and he failed twice. Now, that doesn't mean he's bad at his job. I'm not saying to fire George. Maybe George, the team around those players are good, so maybe George is really good at procuring players. But in terms of making a global decision, in terms of making something that's bigger, you want to give him that authority, you it's buyer beware.
Speaking of which, this is random. Does a coach like Hackett, when he moves his family to Denver, do they buy or rent?
No, they buy. I mean, he was convinced he was going to be. Look, I mean, Colin Cowherd had him go into the Super Bowl for the next decade. I mean, are you kidding me? Everybody thinks they're going to go somewhere. I mean, come on. They think this is no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the tragedy of it. This is what happens is, okay, he's home for Christmas. He's got three more years of salary. He's going to wait for the cycle to open up. I'm sure he's going to get phone calls from guys who are defensive coaches who think they have a chance to be a head coach. Would you be interested in being my offensive coordinator? You know, and or my quarterback coach? And then he's going to want to get back in, or does he just stay there? You know, his kids are probably in school. They're cut. You know, it's really hard part of the business. It's a hard part of the business.
Yeah, it certainly is. And there's the Broncos statement where obviously they were very conciliatory. But the big takeaway from that is the new ownership group looks like they're going to stand by George Payton, who made the hire of Hackett and, of course, made the trade for Russell Wilson. So that's the story there with the Denver Broncos as they part ways with Coach Nathaniel Hackett. My assumption is this is mutual. They probably had a conversation this morning, and Nathaniel was like, Yeah, I'm no, good. I think, this if you guys
was, want. I think when that ball, when that whistle blew and Jim Nance and Tony Romo signed off, I think that they said this can't go on any longer. This can't go on any longer.
Do you mean Tony Romo and Jim Nance's sweaters, or you mean the head coaching position there with the Broncos? Because the sweaters
no,
were rough
the head coaching position.
the sweaters were yikes. And your boy Romo. Romo approaches broadcasting, and I find him entertaining, but it's YOLO. I mean, he's just out there. He's slanging it, right, as far as a broadcaster. Anyway. Okay, so there's the story. Nathaniel Hackett, and you wish the best for him. He could probably just call up your boy LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers and say, "Can I come back?"
Sure. Well, no, they hired to replace him. They hired Tom Clements, who's the best friend of Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
He could come back. I mean, maybe he hasn't sold his house yet in Green Bay. I don't know, but maybe he can come back and, you know, and be on the staff because he's got 3 years of a contract.
I always get fascinated by that because I've never owned anything. I'm renting life, so I rent my house. But it just feels like once you get committed to something like that, you got a house in Green Bay, you got a house in Denver, and now you're trying to figure it out with the family. But again, a nice little parachute with money. Money is not a concern for Nathaniel Hackett. When we come back, I believe somebody within that Denver organization is on the list for Step Into My Office. We're going to have a hard conversation with the general manager coming up next right here on the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, VSiN pros get the pro tools. The most popular pro tool by far are the betting splits. Money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes. Today's games and future events. VSiN.com for the betting splits. Remember, you got to be a pro. VSiN.com/subscribe to get involved with the betting splits. We welcome you back here. Mike Pritchard's going to join us. Go ahead, Michael. What do you got?
Well, I just got a text from Big Daddy Vince, the Packer fan.
BDV.
Yeah, BD. He's completely upset. I mean, just out of the blue. Apparently, he saw LaFleur hug Joe Barry after the game, congratulating him, and he was completely incensed by that hug. Like, why would he hug him like that? Like, that's a joke, you know? Like, he was bad. So, anyway, I just thought that was funny.
Big Daddy Vince, of course, Michael's cousin.
He doesn't even like the hugs.
He is the biggest Packers fan on the planet, and he is... He's still crestfallen after a three-game win streak. You know, BDV is hard. He's hard to appease, that BDV.
Yeah.
Right?
No doubt.
Okay.
He is.
It is time. We're going to have our buddy Pritch come in. Pritch will probably have something to say about his Denver Broncos as they fired Nathaniel Hackett. You see the breaking news. You heard it here first on the Lombardi Line and VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's now time for Step Into My Office, an opportunity every Monday for a select few to come into Michael Lombardi's office and Michael help him out. George Payton is the first one to come in. He is the general manager of the 4-11 Denver Broncos. He traded away Drew Lock, Shelby Harris, Noah Fant, 2022 first, second, and fifth rounder, and a 2023 first and second rounder for Russell Wilson, then extended him, gave him $165 million guaranteed. George Payton's up, Michael Lombardi.
Look, George, I think the one thing we can't do is fall into the sunk cost fallacy. I think the first step we took today is probably the right step. And then you've got to do a really good job of going back over your detailed process of what you went through, the one you shared with the Denver Post, the one you were very proud about, and understand how you got to the wrong place, how we got to this. And I think you really got to do a good job of educating the ownership group on what alignment looks like. You know, and I think you've got to understand that you don't control how this organization is going to run. You control how this organization is going to operate. But the organization group defines the team on a macro level, and you need to get the ownership group to get that. You need to be able to have a philosophy that comes from the top and works its way down. Then we need to lean out the organization. We've got too many people that we can't really manage. So the next coach that comes in here is going to have a hard time figuring out how to handle all this. We need one voice all the time. And we got to make sure the owner doesn't look for outside opinions. And then we got to have to be patient because it's going to take some time. Learn what you do well and what you don't do well and move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Payton. Enjoy your holidays. We welcome in Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins' first-year head coach. Remember, they're sitting 8-7. They were 8-3 through 11. They're 0-4 their last four. And the third down efficiency versus the Packers, 2-for-7, just 28%. Mike McDaniel sits down on the couch with Mr. Lombardi.
You know, Mike, every coach goes through this. Every young coach particularly goes through it. And I think you have a lot to learn from what has experienced. The only thing we learn is from our losses, never from our wins. And I think you could look at this four-game win streak and reevaluate what kind of team do you really want to be. And it's really wonderful that we have incredible skill players and we can have a one-play drive for 84 yards and score. But we also have a defense that's a liability. We also have a quarterback that isn't always going to play at a high level. He's not elite. We're going to have to help him a little bit. So I think what you really need to do this week before you take the plane up to New England is figure out how you have to play the game to win the game, how you're going to have to manage the game. And I think that comes from your ability to design a run game, your ability to feature the run game more than feature the big play. Because big plays are great, and we all have to score points. But we put our defense in a liability, and we got to work this thing around being a good three-dimensional team and handle game situations at a higher level because our defense isn't good enough to carry us, and Tua's not good enough to carry us. And by making big plays, you put those two things in play. And I think you need to be honest with yourself and stop defending the quarterback and start understanding that it's really important that we have more balance. We're the 32nd rush attempt team in the National Football League. We hired you because of your ability to run the ball. Now you become this play. You're playing Madden in the basement in Des Moines. Like, let's manage the game better to help us win.
I'm going to ask you to project a little bit. So we said Nathaniel Hackett doesn't really have that leadership vibe on the sideline. Didn't feel like, from what we heard in the preseason, that there was a lot of unity. Do you get the impression Mike McDaniel in his first year has a head coaching vibe to him?
No, I've never felt that way. You know, I've never felt that way. I mean, I've never felt that way in the interview. Do I think he's probably smart? They tell me he went to Yale, so that makes him smart, right? I mean, it has to. I mean, if you went to Yale, you're smart. But I think there's something different about being smart and being practical and understanding what it takes to win a game. And I think that's what he's going to do. I don't think the Dolphins have taken the approach they wanted their head coach to be that dynamic leader. They had that with Flores, and he was too dynamic. He was too strong on them. They didn't want that. They wanted a softer, more gentler, somebody who's more of a manager, not a leader. That's what they have. Now, will this work? Well, we'll see. What does he do with Boyer? Is he going to keep Boyer on the staff? They haven't played good defense. Now, Boyer was able to come back. I mean, last year they played different defenses, we mentioned earlier. This year they're playing more aggressively because that's what Boyer wants to do, but it's not working. Why doesn't he walk over to Boyer's office and say, hey, Josh, we're not good enough to play all this man-to-man. Let's go back to what we did last year, some zone dogs, some zone, and kind of handle that and see if it will work out better for us.
You know, five presidents went to Yale. Do you know the presidents that went to the – like what college had the most presidents go through? Yale was two.
I think it was Stanford.
Harvard.
Harvard, yeah. Stanford or Harvard. I guess,
you got to be smart. Okay,
Dominic, maybe I can get Dominic into Harvard. You know, he's got a chance.
Dominic's going to have his pick. Trust me. I met the kid.
I hope so.
He's much smarter than me as a 44-year-old male. There goes Mike McDaniel. Here comes Josh McDaniels. This is not going to be easy for you. You're close to the team. 2022 record, 6-8. Raiders have lost three straight one-score games.
Yeah, but I think to me this isn't a hard conversation. This is about understanding who we are. I think after 15 games now and watching the offense and being in so many tight games, I think, Josh, you have to be honest with yourself and say, okay, who are we and how do we build this thing moving forward? Right? We've tried to keep it together as best we could because it was a playoff team last year. But I think if you're really honest with the team and you break the team down, you see that we've had a lot of opportunities to win games. We've had a lot of opportunities to win close games. And when we break that thing down, is it because we haven't done a good job coaching, or is it the players, or is it the scheme? And I think when you watch it, I think you can honestly say there were throws that we're not making. So now you've got to make a decision. Are you going to continue down this road with Derek Carr, or are you going to have to pivot and go another direction? And I think it's going to be a hard one. It's going to be a hard one because Carr does some really good things. But is he going to allow you to win games moving forward? Is he going to allow you to keep going and win those close games? And if you don't feel like that happens, you're going to have to make a hard decision. It won't be popular because people are saying, hey, went to the playoffs last year, but you're going to have to make some hard decisions because at the end of the day, their inability to protect the football with the passing game, to make critical plays in games, whether it's the throw to Davante Adams last week or it's the throw to Hunter Renfrow or the throw to Darren Waller, we just haven't done it all year.
Okay, I have a selfish one. So my friends in Michigan, apparently Dustin posted a clip where I said that Dan Campbell should have been fired. I was saying it for dramatic effect because here was his quote, Dan Campbell, Michael Lombardi, we weren't physically, mentally, or emotionally ready to play. My point was, and I was being facetious, of course Dan Campbell doesn't deserve to be fired, but if you're going to say, winner of 6 of 7, a playoff push, that you didn't have the team physically, mentally, or emotionally ready to play in the biggest game of the season, to me, that was an indictment on himself.
Well, but I think this, though, Patrick, I think to me the hardest thing to do in any sport is a young team for a head coach, a young team, especially a young head coach, to get a young team to maintain their level of excellence, especially when they're playing against a team that they think they're better than. See, the Lions can't think they're better than anybody, right?
Interesting.
They can't think they're better than anybody. But when you start to win, it's Parcells called, you start drinking the Kool-Aid. You know, you start believing in yourself. You start taking the cheese. Parcells used to put a bunch of cheese around guys' lockers. Don't take the cheese. You're going to get trapped. This was a trap game for them.
Interesting.
They fell right into it. And for a young coach, it happens, right? It does happen. And I think this is something that Campbell has to overcome. I mean, when you win in the NFL and you're a head coach, that week going into the game, you have to be probably the biggest jerk of all time. Because you got to raise the level. Everybody's happy and content. Everybody's having a martini. Everybody's having two martinis. Everybody's eating the chow. Oh, we're great. Read the paper. We're great. You got to raise the level up. When you lose, you don't have to because you have their attention. That's a challenge for any head coach.
That's Parcells is a legend. Just leaving cheese around the locker room. That's hilarious.
That's what he'd do. He would just leave cheese in the locker room with a trap. You want to take it? And he would. And all week long, all Parcells would have talked about is the cheese. And he would have used every line that was coming out of Carolina. And he would have mocked it up a little bit to make it worse than it was. To get the players. Oh, they think you're no big deal. They can't wait to bust your kneecaps.
Who Moved My Cheese? Also a motivational book. Maybe Russell Wilson wrote it. When we come back, we got Nathaniel Hackett out in Colorado, a gentleman that played there, and our partner here on VSiN. Mike Pritchard's going to join us next here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. As we welcome you back here, I'm Patrick Maher. He's Michael Lombardi. We're going to be joined by Mike Pritchard. Quickly want to let you know, VSiN Bowl Betting Guide got a bowl game today. Daily best bets on every game. Written previews of every bowl game. Again, a lot of volatility in the bowl betting market. Make sure you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up, become a pro, and you get all the guides. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we're back. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. Mike Pritchard joins us now, of course, former first-round draft pick, a host here at VSiN, did a great job sitting in for Michael Lombardi yesterday on Christmas. We appreciate it. I know it was a long day for Pritch because, remember, Pritch is from Vegas, so he gets off doing the Lombardi Line, and then he's got to make the rounds like Santa Claus until 2:30 in the morning. So, Pritch, it was a long day, and we appreciate you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm fumes. I'll be honest. I'm on fumes, but I'm okay. I'm okay. I can get through this. Play hurt.
Well, we appreciate you. Now, you've heard the news, and yes. Of course, you played for the Broncos. Nathaniel Hackett is out. Your immediate reaction? I'm guessing you weren't shocked after the performance yesterday.
No, not at all. I mean, you and I talked about it yesterday on Lombardi Line, you know, and should he be fired? Yes. Will he be fired? I didn't know if it was going to happen before the end of the season, but enough is enough right there. I mean, that team was not prepared, and that team was not even engaged. I think as a coach, you have to know how to reach players. You know, you have to know how to communicate. You have to know how to bring out the best in players. And if you can't do that, forget about X's and O's. Forget about scheme and all that. I mean, I think it really starts with the passion and you know, just for a constant reminder of how important this is for you or how important it should be for you, right? But if you can't do that as a head coach, then, I mean, yeah, certainly you don't have any business being a head coach in the National Football League.
Mike, I felt like after the first quarter, there was no way. I thought after the Carolina game when they lost and were humiliated in that game, I thought that he was going to get fired when he got back to Denver there, and I said it on my podcast. But after the first quarter, this idiot that I am, who was on Denver thinking that a national TV game, you know, the Rams are really not very good. You can run the ball on the Rams. You know, you'll win this 17-10. The defense matches up. After the first quarter, there was no doubt in my mind he was going to get fired once that plane landed back in Denver. Did you think
absolutely.
The same?
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. I mean, I thought that the Rams had checked out because, you know, they won the championship, the Super Bowl. They got their rings. A number of guys are not playing or participating, and they have a lot of reasons to be checked out. But, you know, and I don't know if it's the Baker Mayfield effect either. A lot of people are trying to make it that way, but I think it's Coach McVay, you know, Sean McVay, when you can communicate and say, hey, look, you guys have a great opportunity. Young players have a great opportunity. We're not built to win a Super Bowl right now, but you have a great opportunity in front of you, and it should be important to you. Whereas if you're the Broncos, and what you said, Michael, when it unfolds the way it did, when you have fights and arguments and stuff like that on the sideline, that's not a team, you know. They had the makings of it, too, in the beginning of the year. One of the most overrated teams coming into this season was the Denver Broncos. And I thought when you elevate yourself out of a locker room like Russell Wilson did, it's no different than what Aaron Rodgers did at the beginning of the year, too. But when you've elevated yourself out of the locker room, you'll have zero leadership and zero direction, as it looks, too, because no credibility with the head coach. I think the GM is under fire as well, as you got new ownership and everybody wants to go in a different direction. So what we saw yesterday is the result of everybody just on different pages right now.
I think it's safe to say, Michael Lombardi, if you're holding on to that Trey Lance MVP ticket and a Nathaniel Hackett Coach of the Year ticket, you can go ahead and rip those up. Right,
yeah,
at this point.
I would think that. Yeah,
I think you're probably safe with that. The idea of playing for a lame duck coach, Pritch, the assumption is Kingsbury, unless Bidwell doesn't want to pay him out, is on his way out in Arizona, where it's a disaster right now. I know I've asked you this before, and maybe it was Dennis Erickson, but have you played for, what's it like in a locker room where you realize the coach probably isn't coming back?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I think two occasions for me, my third year in Atlanta, because we didn't back up what we did my first year going to the playoffs, and we didn't back that up the next 2 years. So my contract, I was becoming a restricted free agent. We had, you know, a coach. Well, I was about to call him Coach Prime. But Deion Sanders, you know, he was becoming a free agent. Michael Haynes, Andre Rison. I mean, a lot of notable players on that roster were becoming free agents. And it just didn't look like it was going to stay in that direction. So we figured Coach Glanville was going to get fired at the end of the year, and it turns out that was the case. And, you know, your decisions as a professional athlete go in a different direction after that. And then it was, you know, with Dennis Erickson, the rumors about, you know, the potential of what could be outside of Dennis Erickson and what could happen in the Pacific Northwest with the Seahawks. I mean, obviously that became apparent with Mike Holmgren emerging that way. So, yeah, I was privy to that. But in this situation, the Broncos or even all these teams right now, you know, when you think about the lame duck situation, you don't know what direction they're going to go in. At least, from a betting standpoint, it's hard to gauge that. And so therefore you wonder what type of effort you're going to see. I mean, Wilkes took over early enough to start to convey a certain message and deliver a certain message in that locker room that the players have bought into. But there's a number of situations, obviously, where that's not happening.
You know, I think what Wilkes was able to do is he came in, he got rid of Robbie Anderson right away because I think Robbie Anderson wasn't exactly endearing himself to the team. But in the Denver case, what I would recommend if I was in George Payton's shoes is I would tell the owner that you need to go down there in front of the team meeting and you need to remind the players they work in the organization that these next two games are going to be critically evaluated for who's going to remain a pro player and who's not going to be a Bronco. And it has to come from you, because Capers can say it, but everybody knows Capers is a rent-a-cop. Is basically he's just a substitute teacher. So the players know that. But when the owner walks in the room, who's rarely talking to the team and speaks to the team and says, here's what we expect. And I've instructed my general manager, George, to pay attention, to really let me know who's playing and who's quit. This is going to be the measure of our true test of our character. That can go a long way.
Yeah. Well, Dom Capers, who will, on an interim basis, lead the Denver Broncos, will lead the Denver Broncos on New Year's Day to Kansas City, Pritch, and Kansas City's laying 13.5 here. At this point, you have to assume that those dudes in the locker room are playing for their jobs and self-preservation, right?
I think so. Absolutely. 100% there, Patrick. You do not want to put out bad tape. And I don't care how good you think you are, how good you think you should be. At this point, you still don't want to put out bad team. I saw a defense not even play to their level or to their standard, right? And that's disappointing. So maybe a rebound in that regard, you can expect that. And Capers being a defensive guy, obviously, it's about communication at this point. It's about exactly what Michael just talked about. This is your job. This is something that you have to remain passionate about. It has to be important to you. You cannot slip on your performances, because if you do, there's going to be many more changes, right? I mean, that has to be conveyed. And certainly from an ownership standpoint, if you can go into the locker room and understand what their standard is as a player, that could be beneficial. But my goodness, the leadership on that team, if they have any, that needs to emerge big time for the Broncos right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's all that's left, right? I mean, Capers is just there to steer the ship. I mean, the young defensive coordinator who has done a good job up until yesterday, he's probably, why didn't he get the job? Because probably they're going to interview him for the job, and they don't want to tarnish him with two losses going into the next year. And you could, and somebody has to communicate that to him, too. Say, look, you're going to be considered for the head coaching job here. You've done a good job. We didn't want to tarnish you, but you need to continue to perform at a level. The same speech you give the coaches, the same speech you give the players, you got to give the coaches too. Look, your work here in the next 2 weeks is going to really define your character moving forward, whether we're all here together or not.
You know, Michael, real quick, could that be a distraction for Ivero? Because again, that was foreign what I saw from that defense yesterday.
I mean, it looked to me like Sean McVay had every call before the call was made. It looked like they were running cards on Denver. Yeah. I thought it was like almost like a practice. Every game was 8 yards. It was like a carded practice, and there was no intensity. There was no fire. And I miscalculated it, Mike, because I thought that would be a game, because of national TV, there would be some pride in those players. But that was an absence of pride by the Broncos in every aspect of the game.
I saw defenders, and Pritch, you can speak on it more than I, obviously. I saw defenders pulling up on tackles. You could see that they were making business decisions, it appeared.
Yeah, I'll take you back to In Living Color. We used to have a phrase, the Homie Award. Remember Homie the Clown and on Living Color? I don't play that. That's we saw a lot of that with some Broncos players on the defensive side of the ball.
And that's why they have to have somebody walk in the room and remind players that they do it.
Yeah. Yeah, those Broncos defenders were taking choppy steps as they got closer to the ball. Is what I
yes,
like.
They were.
it's been such a great defense all year. And my guess is that's what the ownership said. Listen, we have to let Hackett go because now the defense is completely given up. Okay, plenty to do. We do close out week 16. The Chargers win. They're in Indy tonight with Pritch and Michael Lombardi next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, the Lombardi Line is brought to you by BetMGM. And remember, BetMGM has the best loyalty program in the game. When you wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM reward points and convert those points into free bets, hotels, airfare, stays. It's the best program in the game. Like I said, every time you make a bet, it's like a credit card. You get points, you accrue them. So go to BetMGM.com or download the app. It's 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. Got to be 21 years or older. Okay, we're back. We do have a Monday Night Football game. The Chargers win. They're in the postseason. They're at Indy tonight. Mike Pritchard joins Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher here on the Lombardi Line. Just a quick note, then I want to get to Tua. Michael, you can see on your board About 20 minutes ago, it was 4 everywhere. It's now 3.5. So yeah, I mean, everybody's gone the Chargers 3.5.
Yeah, and I think to me, go through the Chargers score, Thomas Gable. I mean, they play close games. Do I think they can win? Yeah, I think they can win. But I think the Colts will play after being embarrassed last week. I think they'll try to play too, and it's a hard place to play. Remember, you know, we lose sight a little bit of this. The Colts beat the Chiefs at home this year, right? I mean, the Colts have played some – I mean, they had Dallas into the fourth quarter until it all blew up. Now, Nick Foles has got to play good, but their defense has got to play good too.
Yeah. And the splits here over at BetMGM, John Ewan reporting 69% of the tickets written up on the Chargers, just 19% of the money. You're always looking for those kind of splits like that, Michael. So 19% of the handle on the Chargers, yet 69% of the tickets. So interesting there. Another note from John Ewing, and I'll go to Pritch with this and get Michael's take. Before the 4-game losing streak, Tua in the market was 5-1 to win the MVP. Now the 4-game losing streak, he's 125-1 to win the MVP. Obviously, he's not going to win it there. But you said something during the break. You said you could see this Tua regression coming.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of predictable. I think when you skew your play selection in a certain direction, that's an indicator. And that's why I often talk about when you're looking at stats, when you're trying to break down games, the forward-looking indicator, the best one that I've found and discovered from a betting standpoint is play selection. Like, if you look at a team that skews it high, like a Tampa Bay, and they're struggling to score, I mean, they have a handful of plays that's going to get them to the finish line. And we saw that play out last night. I mean, that's the case for a number of teams. And Miami in particular, they, for whatever reason, have not exploded with the rushing attack. I mean, Mike McDaniel was the run game coordinator in San Francisco. That elevated him to a head coaching job. But yet he wants to be this prolific play caller and passing the football. But Tua is a timing, rhythm, anticipating quarterback. He doesn't really have that necessary arm strength for all the throws or certainly creative throws, right? So I think once the league catches up to you on tape, what are your options? Where else can you go? And if you have skewed your play selection heavily one-sided, then you're limited, right? Because you haven't really perfected the other side of that. So I think that was a struggle. That was going to be predictable, and we're seeing that play out in the month of December into January now.
You know, and I think to me the other thing that's really unfair is there's this polarization, and it happens all over in this country in terms of politics, and now it's trickled into sports. You either love Tua or you hate him. I'm not a hater. I'm just trying to correctly evaluate him and try to put some perspective on him. Like, stop trying to make this poor kid carry the team. He's not that talented. He's good. He can play in the NFL. We've all seen it. You know, we've all seen players. Is he as good as Mark Brunell? No. Mark Brunell had a stronger arm and could run faster, okay? And Mark Brunell had a good career. Is he as good as Chad Pennington? Probably a similar guy. You know, throws it, good timing, good rhythm. But the team has to be built around him. And so I don't hate Tua. I'm just trying to make people aware of he's not this elite player. And it goes back to the draft. Because Herbert's an elite player. And Miami took the non-elite player over the elite player, and they keep trying to justify it. And it's not really fair to the kid.
Great point.
Comparing Herbert and Tua, I mean, it's disrespectful not to just to Herbert. It's not fair to Tua. Once you start turning those two into the comp, it's like you're doing Tua a disservice. He's not even on the same level as Justin Herbert. And speaking of which, Herbert and the Chargers are looking to make it 3 in a row, Pritch, tonight in Indy. Interesting. Herbert against the spread as a favorite, he's 13-15-1 ATS. As a dog, he's 11-6. So they will go into this one, the Chargers, as favorites over Indy. But as we mentioned, Michael, how high did this get? It got up to 4.5, correct?
Four and a half. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Open three, bet up to 4.5, Pritch, and now we're all the way down to 3.5 with the Chargers laying it at Indy.
A lot of layers here. I mean, think about Gus Bradley, had coached with the Chargers, right? He's familiar with Justin Herbert. The scheme that he runs, I think, is conducive for what the Chargers want to do with that passing attack too, right? The cover one, the cover three zone, the disguise, the coverages that way, and then can I get after you up front? And Gus Bradley, I mean, let's face it, he's got a top 10 passing defense. And the Chargers, and here's what I'm talking about with play selection. and why Justin Herbert is so fantastic. They are right behind, a notch behind Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and skewing it heavily pass, almost 70% pass-run ratio, even though they have Austin Eckler, even though they have an emerging running back that backs up Austin Eckler as well. But it's been the offensive line. The offensive line are only giving up or allowing 3.7 yards per rush, and that's not good, especially on the road. You have to be able to run the football on the road against a good defense, and the Chargers don't do that. But they do have Justin Herbert, and they're trying to get him or ask him to be like a Brady, right? And so I see this as a close game, you know, and that's indicative of that line move as well.
Nick Foles in for the Colts, Michael Lombardi. What do you expect from your boy playing under center for the first time for the Colts here?
I mean, he'll be in a lot of shotgun. They don't have their running back, Williams, you know, so they're going to have to do a lot of different things. But, you know, you can run the ball on the Chargers. Again, here's another game where our man McDaniel decided to go out to Los Angeles and start throwing it all over the lot. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you got to run the ball on the Chargers. Make them defend play action pass. Take advantage of some of the matchups. Don't make Nick Foles win the game. Get some throws down the field. I mean, one thing with Ryan, the field was shrinking and shrinking by the day, so it became a lot easier. You know, play this game. Get into the fourth quarter. Give yourself a chance to win it in the fourth. They're not going to run away from you. They didn't run away from the Houston Texans when they played them on the road this year. Houston made a comeback in the second half. Now, they won the game by 10, but still Houston was able to come back. The Chargers are a team that kind of sometimes plays to the level of comp. They play above it, but they're going to play a close game. And I think the reason I think they fall short is because they don't have a 1-2 punch. When they had Melvin Gordon and Eckler, I thought they were better because they could pound you a little bit, and then Eckler would come in fresher.
Well, yeah, and Adam Burke notes, and as you and Thomas were discussing earlier, Michael, they've racked up a bunch of yardage, the Chargers, the last 2 weeks, but they've turned those gains only into 40 points total. And also, the Chargers, where they've struggled, Pritch, this year, is they're 26th in red zone touchdown percentage. That's not good enough for a team that's led by Herbert.
Right, and you got to win a game like this on the road if you're thinking about entertaining the playoffs or running the playoffs. But to Michael's point, you know, I think, and I view the Chargers as a finesse team because of the pass-run ratio offensively skewed it heavily towards the pass. They don't have that physical presence, 3.7 yards per rush in a running attack. And that carries over to the defensive side of the ball, too. They want to rush the passer, but yet they don't want to buckle up that chin strap and be physical. And we know the league has turned to a more physical game, right? And we're looking at the emerging teams that are more balanced, closer to 50%, 50-50 when it comes to pass-run ratio. So I think the Chargers need to find that type of identity. I don't know if Staley's the type of coach to bring that out of them. And therefore, I think they're vulnerable at times.
Will Sean Payton be scouting this game, Michael Lombardi?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the Chargers are so close that all they got to do is, I think, what, win one more game and they're in? It would be hard for me to imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, hard to me to imagine that, now, I think, as I've said often on the show, the line to get the Charger job will go from Santa Monica all the way to Portland, Maine. I mean, everybody's going to want that job because of the quarterback.
Oh, without a doubt. That's the trick, Pritch, with the Denver job, is the new coach has to come in and marry himself to Russell Wilson. That's the issue.
Woo! Yeah. Good luck with that. Good luck with the entourage, the everything else associated with Russell Wilson right now. Good luck with that.
Yeah, all the positive affirmations that he spits, sometimes comes across a little hollow, to say the least. Okay, on the way out, Michael, I know for a fact you said earlier, grab the 4.5 with Indy. It's down to 3.5 here.
I think you can't risk the 3. If you got the 3.5, obviously that's a good number to take too, because you get that half point. I think it's a field goal game, Patrick. That's the way I felt about it all week. I do think the Colts will play better. If they don't play well tonight, then, you know, obviously this is the end of the Saturday in the park experiment.
Lean here, Pritch, for you?
Same thing. Same lean right there. I mean, I love the point situation earlier. I don't want to chase that, but it's about a field goal game, and certainly you're on the road with a hook. That's dangerous to me.
Thank you, Pritch. Michael Lombardi, enjoy the game. I'll see you on Thursday.
Patrick. Thanks, Pritch.
Okay,
appreciate you.
Yeah, Pritch, get some rest. Brian Ortega, thank you very much. Big Bets is next.